The Council of Trent, then, the history of the Council. You know, a time will come when a man will no longer be able to say, I speak Latin and am a Christian, and go his way in peace. There will come frontiers of all kinds between them, and there will be no end to them. Such was Cardinal Cajetan's prophetic statement to Martin Luther, predicting the end of European Christendom after the dawning of the age of Protestantism. In the 15th century just previous, the Church had soared with the High Renaissance, and a new spirit of Christian humanism had captured Catholic life, led by such lights of the Church as St. Thomas More and St. John Fisher. Yet within a century, Protestantism had separated half the souls of Europe from the Catholic Church. Lutheranism, or Calvinism, became the state religion in most of the countries of Central and Northern Europe. The Church of England entered into schism from Rome and then became Protestantized under King Henry VIII. Such was the climate in which was convened in 1545. The 19th Ecumenical Council of the Catholic Church, the Great Council of Trent. This year we celebrate the 450th anniversary of this council, so it is fitting to reflect on the significance and teaching of this great council. In fact, Trent has been called the most important council of the Western Church, having had such an influence over Catholic doctrine and practice that over 300 years passed before another council was held. In this series of three sermons, we shall review, within the constraints of the limited time, first the purpose of the council, then its teachings, and finally the great saints who spread the council's teaching through the world and through the succeeding centuries. Before we begin, we should draw an important distinction between the Council of Trent, which was a dogmatic council, and Vatican II, which was a pastoral council. A dogmatic council defines for all time essential principles of the faith, and requires the assent of the faithful to its teachings when promulgated by the Pope. A pastoral council has no such doctrinal authority, and may even be revised or rescinded at a later date. Not that the Council of Trent failed to treat pastoral concerns, quite the contrary. When Pope Paul III summoned the Council to the northern Italian city of Trent, an area outside of papal control, it was thought that the Protestants might be drawn back to the Church. In fact, during the second session of the Council, Protestant delegates were present, but presented demands that were unacceptable to the Council. Apparently, even a saint like Francis de Sales and the Catholic Emperor thought that compromises could be made with the Protestants in matters not essential to the faith. Shortly, however, they realized that the division in essential doctrine had grown so deep in just 30 years that such measures were fruitless. The Council did its work over a period of 18 years, although for all but four of those years the Council's sessions were suspended because of epidemic or war. When the Council ended in 1564, it had given to the Church for all time clear definitions of Catholic doctrine to refute the rampant errors circulating. It had also concerned itself with reforming Christian life and ecclesiastical discipline that had sunk to a low ebb. The corruption in the Church, which extended even to the papacy itself, had been one of the principal causes of the Protestant revolt. In many ways, the challenge that the Council of Trent had to face parallels the challenge to the faith in our own times.
doctrinal confusion and laxity in the Christian life, even corruption in the church, are not unknown today. At the time of the Council of Trent, there were those who wished to abandon long-standing practices of the church in order to appease attacks upon the church. The Austrian king even asked the council to legalize marriage for priests and to permit the reception of Holy Communion under both species, both of which violated the long-standing tradition of the Western Church. Yet the council rejected such requests and confounded some dire predictions for the continuance of the faith. As it turned out, the council's strong defense of Orthodox Catholic doctrine and its insistence upon living the Christian life renewed the confidence of the hierarchy and the faithful in the future of the Catholic Church and inflamed a great renewal lasting four centuries in missionary activity, the liturgy, the devotional life of the Church, and the religious instruction of the people. In the second sermon in this series, we shall review the teachings of this great council, which treated almost every essential doctrine of the Catholic Church and proclaimed for all time the truths of the Roman Catholic faith.